Oh, what a week.
Wow, what a week. I mean, man, are you guys feeling this? I'm feeling this.
I mean, I've had like a rough couple of weeks. I was sick and we had to put off the last episode.
Exactly.
Then, you know, like last week was rough for me. And then this weekend, I had to fix my air conditioner and that was like $500 because I had to put Freon in it. And apparently it hadn't been done before or hadn't been done in a while. So they had to put 5.5 pounds of Freon in my air conditioner.
Oh, yeah.
And that's like $65 to $70 a pound. So that plus like, you know, tax and, you know, like cost of like maintenance and stuff like that. It was like $513. So.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it was super great. Now, I mean, granted, I had that money saved up for emergencies like that, but it doesn't make it hurt my wallet any less.
Oh, of course. It always hurts to see it go. Yeah. Oh, no. Oh, no. Plus, you never want to spend it on an emergency. You want to spend it on something fun, you know?
Things. I was actually saving up that money for my trip to visit my family this month. So,
shoot.
It's okay. I'm still going to visit my family.
I've been waiting for... Good. I'm glad. I've been waiting for jury duty all week. So there's that. I'm not even like being called in. I'm just waiting. I'm just in waiting, guys. So it's just not fun. I've been listening to lots of podcasts, just waiting. Yeah. But then they're like, hey, you still have to report to work. And I'm like, but I work nights. So that still sucks.
Yeah, that's not great.
But you guys are back for another episode of Cats and Cooking, right? Okay, so, you know, and we used to call it Cooking and Cats, but people started to just ignore the ampersand, and we can't have that, guys. Stop sending us your emails.
You don't want people calling it Cooking Cats, because we're not about cooking cats. We're about cats and cooking. Plus, it's alphabetical cats, this way anyway, so.
Exactly. So exactly. It's alphabetical
forgive
this way.
Forgive the rebrand, but, we're cats and cooking, not cooking and cats. Too much confusion.
Exactly.
So
we're sorry about the name change, but we'll just roll with it. So anyway, this is Cooking and
Welcome back Cats and Cooking with Sammy and Tessa.
With Sammy and Tessa.
As usual.
I talk about cooking.
Tessa exactly. talks about cooking. I talk about cats. I'm the crazy cat lady in this scenario. So.
And I like fun cooking tools that, you know, could potentially hurt.
Could potentially hurt.
No one.
Dot, dot, dot.
You know, some things happen. Things mm-hmm. happen. So anyway, but we do like to, we like to save money. We like to cook good food. We like to, we like to have a good time in the kitchen, mm-hmm. right? And as long as, you know, the cats stay off the mm-hmm. counter.
Yep. So are you ready to do the cats and cooking coin toss?
I am. I have our lucky coin right here. Oh, it's a little sticky.
Oh, no.
I don't know why. Well, but this is the cooking podcast. I mean,
yeah. Well, you probably got some like syrup in there or something.
Oh, likely,
so there's
likely.
A question. So do you say syrup or syrup?
Oh God, that's a weird. I've never thought syrup. I say pass the syrup.
Syrup. I say syrup, and my syrup. I don't know where I got it because both my parents say syrup, and they got really upset syrup. At me when I said syrup. I'm syrup. Like, yeah, it's syrup. Can you pass the syrup? And they're like, it's syrup.
When you ride a horse, do you put your feet in the
syrups? I don't put it in the stirrups. No, I do not.
Stirrups? Who's picking our head coin toss this time? Who's heads or tails?
Let's go with tails because cats have tails.
Okay.
I know I've made that joke a million times, but it's still funny to me.
And... it's tails. Hey, you're going first.
Okay. All right. So I've been covering the history of some of the oldest cat breeds for a few episodes now, with the Norwegian forest cat being the one that I covered not last episode because we skipped last episode because I was sick, but the episode before I covered the Norwegian forest cat. So this rare breed of cat, however, very well might be the oldest domesticated cat breed in existence, with some believing it to be one of the progenitors of all domestic cat breeds we see today. So I'm talking today about the Egyptian Mau.
Ooh, neat. Neat. Oh, I've always wanted to know about these. Yeah.
So the ancient Egyptians are the first people to leave extensive evidence of their alliance with domestic cats, an affiliation that developed at least 5,000 years ago, according to Egyptian writings, statues, and bas reliefs. And like the hieroglyphs and stuff like that. So presumably, wow, cats were first welcomed for their ability to keep rodents away from stores of grain and thus prevent famine, and for their ability to kill snakes. However, later Egyptian domestic cats became beloved household companions and then sacred animals associated with the gods. Evidence in the form of depictions, paintings, and sculptures shows that spotted cats existed during the time of the Egyptian cat cult, and some believe that the predecessor of the Mau was the same cat worshipped by the ancient Egyptians. A papyrus painting dating around 1100 BCE shows Ra, the sun god, in the form of a spotted cat beheading the evil serpent Apep. And I've actually got a picture of that. I will post that to the Instas. Let's see. In 1580 BCE, a papyrus record quotes a spotted cat as saying, "I am the cat which fought near the Persea tree in Anu on the night when the foes of Neb-Urchir were destroyed." So long, long history of Egyptians having like a good relationship with cats and domesticating cats and even worshiping them and considering them gods or akin to gods.
Oh.
So, yeah.
Oh, wow.
So, and the description of what those ancient cats look like is very similar to what the Egyptian Mau breed looks like currently. So.
Oh, yeah. I see.
In addition, a 1400 BCE tomb painting found in Thebes depicts a spotted cat retrieving a duck for an Egyptian hunter, showing that cats were not only worshipped, but played an important role in everyday life as well. So they were like hunting cats. Like, you know how we have like hunting dogs that'll go like, you know, fetch the downed bird? They had cats doing that.
Oh, wow.
Crazy, right?
Wow. They could... Wow. See, you know, you see what happens when you respect animals? They respect you back. They do. You know, we just don't show our cats enough respect now. Just, and I'm just not willing to kiss that much.
Well, a lot of people just, they don't assume that cats are as able to learn tricks and stuff like that as dogs are. But they actually have the propensity to learn more tricks than dogs do because they're a little bit more intelligent than dogs. However, they're more temperamental and they're more like, they've got more of an individual personality. They're less likely to just follow orders blindly the way a dog will because they, you know, a dog has that kind of like, you know, unbridled love for its owner and its person.
Yeah.
You know, where it's like,
and the call and response.
You know, a dog sees a person as an authority figure. A cat sees a person as a peer. You know,
yeah,
so it's like they can learn tricks just as well as dogs can, and in some cases better, but they're not going to just do them willy-nilly for you if they don't respect you. So
yeah,
it's interesting.
Yeah.
But anyway, if, as some people believe, the Egyptian Mau is a living artifact of that ancient era, then the Mau is one of the oldest breeds of domestic cats. Characteristics common to modern Maus can be seen in papyrus paintings right down to the random spots. However, that's not proof of anything except that spotted cats lived in ancient Egypt. So there's no way to really definitively prove that the current Egyptian Mau breed is descendant from these 5,000-year-old depictions of cats.
Oh, you know, I see.
It definitely looks like they may be, but there's no way to definitively be sure. So
interesting. I'll just pretend they persevered.
So the Egyptian Mau joined the European cat fancy in the early 1900s. Fanciers in Italy, Switzerland, and France worked to develop the breed. However, as it did many pedigreed breeds, World War II decimated the Egyptian Mau population, and by the mid-1940s, the Mau was almost extinct. And I will get more into that later on, because that's really fascinating. I didn't realize that World War II had such an effect on pets, but I will get into that because I did a deep dive on that and was like, this is fascinating.
Yeah, you don't usually think about how it affected the pets. Oh, I can't wait.
It affects it in more ways than you could possibly imagine. Like, you always, like, off the top of your head, you probably think, yeah, war probably affects pets because, you know, it's such a big effect on people. But World War II especially really negatively affected pets, and I will get into why later. So, the efforts of the exiled Russian princess Natalie Trobetskoy brought the Mao back from the brink of extinction. So she, like, almost single-handedly brought them back from the brink of extinction. While in Italy, she rescued some of the few remaining specimens. She was also instrumental in importing at least one Mao from Egypt via the Syrian embassy. In 1956, Trobetskoy immigrated to the United States, bringing her three Maos bred from her original stock. Upon arrival, Trobetskoy established the Fatima Egyptian Mao Cattery and began to promote the breed. The Mao soon collected a following who wanted to preserve the rare, beautiful, historically significant breed. Because of the small gene pool and because additional Maos were almost impossible to attain from Egypt, a certain amount of inbreeding and outcrossing were required to continue the breed in North America. Selective breeding for temperament was also a priority since disposition problems were noted in some bloodlines. In the 1980s and 1990s, additional Maos were brought into the United States from Egypt, and then this widened the gene pool, which was vital to the breed's health and well-being, because obviously, like, you know, two or three decades of inbreeding is not good for any breed of animal.
So
in the 1980s and 1990s, more, like, non-inbred Maos were brought in so that they could actually, like, widen the gene pool and kind of stabilize the breed. Yeah. In 1968, CFF was the first to accept the Egyptian Mao for championship status. The CCA soon followed, and the CFA granted championship in 1977. Today, all major associations accept the Mao. So now we're going to get into a little description of what they look like and just them as a cat. So we're going to start with their temperament. Egyptian Maos love playing with water and are smart enough to learn how to turn on a faucet. Despite their high energy levels, they adore curling up on your lap for a snuggle session. They are great with playful children and other cat friendly pets who can keep up with their active and energetic lifestyle. Though reserved and wary around unfamiliar guests, they warm up quickly. Some characteristics of their appearance. They have a wedge-shaped but soft head that sits atop a muscular body. The forehead features an M shape, and their cheeks have mascara lines, all of which create a slightly worried look. If they don't have the M shape on their head, they have the more rare scarab shape, which is kind of M-like, but instead of... So an M would literally just be like an M on their forehead. The scarab shape is kind of like a V, so like the middle of an M, but instead of like the two feet of the M coming directly down from the top of the V, they come from the middle, and then they branch out. So it kind of looks like legs, like beetle legs.
Oh, okay.
I have pictures of that, so I will post those as well.
Okay. Wow. Yeah.
And the M shape, that is mostly in North American Egyptian Maos because they were bred with tabbies, where the M comes from.
And I was going to say, I've seen the M on the little tabby brow.
So the M comes from breeding with tabbies or moggies, as they're sometimes called. So they have medium to large ears on top of their wedge-shaped head. Their spots range from small to large and vary in shape. Their hind legs are longer than the front, and they have small, delicate feet. Their tail is long and banded with a dark tip, and they have a notable, like, dorsal stripe. So basically a stripe that goes all along their spine.
Oh, wow.
Their lifespan is 12 to 15 years, though they can live 20 or more if they're well taken care of. They're very hardy cats. As far as colors go, the spotted coat comes in three different colors: silver, bronze, and smoke. The smoke is a black-tipped, pale silver fur, it's gorgeous if you've seen pictures of them.
Yeah.
The breed can come in several other colors, including solid black, blue silver, blue spotted, blue smoke, and solid blue, but they aren't allowed in the show circuit. So only those first three, silver, bronze, and smoke, are allowed in championship circuits. The other ones are too far removed from, like,
too inbred.
They're too far. They're too bred with other species or other.
Yeah. Right. Too outbred.
Yes. Let's see. In addition to their unique spots, Mao's also have large, uniquely colored eyes in what many refer to as gooseberry green. So they have very green eyes. So now we're going to get into the whole World War II thing. So as you may remember, I mentioned that many cat breeds were affected by World War II, but it wasn't just cats. It was pets in general. I did a bit of research into why that exactly is and was actually kind of horrified to find out that not just cats, but pets in general were affected by the war. At the beginning of World War II, a government pamphlet led to a massive cull of British pets. As many as 715,000 British pets were killed in just 1 week.
Holy cow!
The cull came as a result of a public information campaign that caused an extraordinary reaction among anxious Britons. In the summer of 1939, just before the outbreak of the war, the National Air Raid Precautions Animal Committee, or NARPAC, was formed. It drafted a notice, Advice to Animal Owners. The pamphlet said, if at all possible, send or take your household animals into the country in advance of an emergency. It concluded, if you cannot place them in the care of neighbors, it really is kindest to have them destroyed. The advice was printed in almost every newspaper and announced on the BBC. So,
wow.
I mean, people took it so seriously that, you know, like people were, all the vet hospitals were like overrun. They didn't have enough room.
I bet.
You know, like shelters were overrun because, you know, the vets were like, we're not just going to put down these healthy animals. You know, so like a lot of shelters were overrun. People started like cat sanctuaries and, you know, just like shelters for, you know, like,
wow,
abandoned animals because people panicked, you know, because not everybody had friends out in the country that they could just dump their pets on. You know, I mean, they were already.
And then I can imagine, you know, during the war, you know, they knew they were going to start shipping people out. And households of pets.
Yeah, well, they were already sending their children out to the countryside. You know, I mean, I don't know if you remember that, but during World War II, or I don't remember that. I don't know if you remember learning about that, but during World War II, people in the cities, specifically London, would ship their children out to the countryside where they'd be safe from the air raids. It was part of the premise of Chronicles of Narnia, at least the first one.
Yeah, yep.
And they would get shipped out to like random people, not always. Like if they had relatives in the country, they'd ship them to the relatives. But if they didn't, they would kind of get paired up with some random person who lived out in the country.
Wow.
And they would do their best not to split up siblings and family members, but sometimes they'd get split up, you know. But yeah, so they were already sending children out and the government was doing that, but it's like pets were kind of left up to your individual household, you know, and not everybody could afford that. Not everybody had people that they could send their pets with. If they were sending their children off, there's not necessarily a chance or a guarantee that that family taking in your child would be able to take in your pets as well. So a lot of people just panicked and took their pets down to be put down. Like I said, 750,000 in 1 week. And that's not all the pets that, you know, like I couldn't find an exact number on how many pets were put down during World War II, just the first week.
Wow.
So that was 750,000 in 1 week.
Just in the first week.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Wow. That's just insane. That's crazy. I've never thought about how it would have, because I mean, you hear about victory gardens and you're like, oh yay. You know, the people who were left behind kept the house, you know, together. It's like, no, apparently not. You know, the people at home, of course, panic. And, you know, we even saw that at the beginning of the pandemic, you know, when they were saying that you could, you know, that pets could potentially, you know, be a hazard and stuff. And unfortunately we saw so many, you know, stories like that, but thankfully, you know, not that in the thousands like that. But sad that it does still happen.
Yeah. I have a picture of the pamphlet as well. So I will post that also.
Wow. Wow.
But yeah, so the Egyptian Mao it's such a beautiful and interesting breed of cat. And, you know, I'm glad that they were able to pull them from the brink of extinction, you know. And I'm honestly kind of convinced that my boy Dean might at least be part Egyptian Mao. he really fits a lot of the descriptions. He's got that dorsal stripe. He's got spots. His tail is banded with a black tip. He's got green eyes. He's, green, you know, boy. He's like 15, 16 pounds, which is about the average weight that they said males get to. You know, he's got longer back legs than front legs. I mean, from what I can tell doing this research, because I thought he might be Bengal, which Bengals are an off-breed of Egyptian mouse. So,
yeah, you covered that in another episode, so didn't
I covered Bengals, but I, you know, I don't think I mentioned that they were an off-breed from Egyptian mouse, but I found that out today in this research.
How cool.
I thought he was part Bengal, but I think he might be more Egyptian Mao than he is Bengal. He's got the M on his forehead and everything. I mean, he might actually be Mao or part Mao. But it's funny that since starting this podcast and getting to do all this research on cats, it's actually helped me learn about the cats in mine and my family's lives and has actually helped me like potentially identify the breeds of our cats. Like I said, Dean might be Egyptian Mao. Midnight, from what I can tell, might be a Bombay, which is a black cat. They're specifically bred to be black cats. I'll get into them in another episode, but the Bombay is potentially what Midnight is. My parents' cat, the one that we had since I was 12, his name's Kitta. He appears to be either Maine Coon or Norwegian Forest cat. And my brother Joel, his cat Bubby, is most likely a tuxedo. So,
I had a tuxedo growing up, and then I have one now, and then I've got another black cat. And I just think they're all just domestic short hairs.
Well, they might be, but domestic short hair covers a lot. Yeah, it covers a lot.
That's true. It's a mixture.
Of breeds actually, like, they'll be like subclassed as domestic short hair, but they might be from another breed. So, in learning about the breed of your cat can actually help you not only pick the best food for them, but it can also help you keep an eye out for like diseases and disorders that their breed might be susceptible to or have a genetic, like they might be genetically prone to have certain things. Cause just like with dog breeds, some breeds are more prone to have diseases than others. So learning the breed of your pet can actually help you keep an eye out for symptoms of things that might be a genetic disorder. So,
Very true. So know your babies.
Know your fur babies. But yeah, so that's all I have on the Egyptian Mao. So do you want to take a break and then we can talk about your cooking culinary?
Yeah.
Okay.
I got some good stuff for you guys. I'm going to save you some money if you guys are into some comfort food. So stick around. We'll be right back.
Okay. Awesome.
All right. We are back. Mm-hmm. So it's time to talk about some food. We learned about some kitty cats.
Yes.
Now we're going to talk about some food. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. You're hungry. Hungry for some information.
I am hungry, actually. It is getting close to dinner time and I worked out right before recording. So it's like, you know,
You're looking nice and buff.
I'm not.
I got muscles. Look at that.
Look at you. Getting all like buff. Yeah, no, I'm not. I'm just starting to work out and I'm counting calories currently. So this works perfectly with our, you know, that we have a food podcast because you can help me make good food.
I'm gonna ruin your diet a little bit because teach you how to save some money with your comfort food.
Listen, I've got surplus calories today, so I might could actually go treat myself tonight because I've been really good. Like I'm eating only 1500 calories or less a day.
Nice.
So it's like I'll have like a coffee and some oatmeal in the morning. I'll have a salad for lunch. And then I'll have like one of those healthy choice bowls for dinner.
Look at you. You're doing so good.
Yeah. And then I'll have like an apple or something for a snack. But today I've got surplus calories because I worked out. So
yes.
Yeah. So I might actually be able to go treat myself to whatever you're going to talk about today. Yeah.
Nice. Well, I'm going to show you guys one way to make, you know, either one, it could be a favorite of yours, could be something you've never heard of, could be something but it's an easy thing that you can make at home because I know that during the pandemic, it got me a little harder to get out and, you know, get some of your favorite foods.
Right.
And then I'm going to then I'll save you guys money. Okay. So
speaking
first,
of food during the pandemic,
you know, usually.
I was going to say, speaking of food during the pandemic,
go ahead.
Remember when we all jumped on the let's make bread trend?
Right. Remember how it lasted like a month? Maybe
2 weeks.
Maybe a week.
That was a fun episode, though.
Right? Oh my God. And then we tried making bread. And let me tell you, bread scoring, fun. Bread burning. And scoring burnt bread, you know. At least
Not
Ian
so
likes
fun.
Burnt bread. So, okay. So, usually you guys know that, like, we've been doing this, this kind of a little bit of a series lately on, you know, usually we see on the pot on like YouTube, if you're familiar with Joshua Weissman, he does things like But Cheaper and But Better and stuff. But every single time he does these, you still have to be somewhat of a skilled cook to, you know, make it look fancy and nice and gourmet, like you're going out. I don't care about looking fancy, gourmet, or going out. I just want something that tastes decent. Right. And covers all of the bases of what I'm, you know, getting at when we're out, right? Yeah. So this time we're going to talk about famous bowls at KFC. Are you familiar?
No.
Okay. So they used to be one of my favorites when I was working closer to a KFC, even though I really am not a KFC kind of person. Because this was like the only thing I would eat there because it was... It's called a famous bowl.
Yeah, like, no, I haven't. I know they've got like bowls and stuff, but I've never had them. So I don't, I'm not familiar.
It's essentially, it's very simple. And I'm going to teach you how to zhuzh up each one of the little things and how you can make it. I call it my freedom bowl. It's okay. My freedom bowl. So all they are mashed potatoes, gravy,
okay,
corn,
mm-hmm,
cheese, and chicken. Okay. You can do that at home, guys. That's right. Not hard. It's not hard to do that at home. You don't have to go to KFC. You don't have to go to the store. You don't, I mean, you have to go to the store maybe to go get all these, you know, some of these ingredients and stuff. But I can guarantee you that by the time you break it all down, it's going to be cheaper than what you're going to go get down to the store too. I mean, not the store, KFC. Excuse me. So, and then you have the freedom because typically on a bowl, there's like popcorn chicken, right?
Okay.
On a famous bowl, you have the freedom bowls to make whatever kind of chicken you want. You can make it grilled. You can make it fried. You can make it, you can boil it and shred it. You make taco chicken if you want to. I don't know if you would want that with, you know, mashed potatoes, but then you can do whatever you want with your potatoes. You can make hash browns. You can make, mashed potatoes. You can make sour cream mashed potatoes. You could do French fries and you can make some nachos out of this.
Okay.
I mean, the world is your oyster.
Right.
But there's also little ways. So, like say if you're doing your mashed potatoes and you're just going with for the basics, say we're just making the basics on this. I use my Instant Pot. I know I'm kind of a cheater. But just
nothing wrong with an Instant
potatoes.
Pot. Those are
I
a
know.
Valuable tool. They are a valuable tool.
They
in
are
the
so valuable. Guys, invest, invest in an Instant Pot.
Don't
I
get
know.
Me started
and if you
on
can,
the cult of the
attention.
Air fryer.
Oh, I know. I'm one of them. but hey, another pro tip though is pay attention to your targets and stuff. Cause actually sneaky, you know how I got my Instant Pot. We'd been shopping for a particular one for a really long time and we happened to keep passing the exact Instant Pot we wanted, which was Wi-Fi connected for the Bluetooth out of the phone and all that. Yeah. Blah, blah, blah. Fancy dancy. They had labeled the price on the Instant Pot. We're like, that's not right. Why is that's not on sale? Mm-hmm. It was like supposed to be $150 and it was like $129. And we're like, that's weird. But
yeah.
Why is it? In fact, I think even the gap might have even been even bigger than that. And so we were there for one day, passed it up. Went back the next day, it's still mislabeled. And we're like, that's weird. That can't be, that's, someone's going to fix this. Someone's got to fix this. And we came back a third day and no one had fixed it. No one, I mean, we would sit there and scan it and look at it and it matched on Amazon. The exact same thing was like $40 more expensive.
That's where
and so we take it
up
to the front. Of course, it rings up the way it's supposed to for its normal price, but the shelf said it was cheaper than that. The shelf's price, technically, they've mislabeled it. I know you're kind of technically taking advantage of somebody not doing their job right, but you're saving yourself a little money by paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
That's what this episode is about, is paying attention. So I know we're kind of jumping all over a little bit, all over the place on this, but then like I said... Also with potatoes, another little pro tip when you make your mashed potatoes, don't use water, use chicken broth or some kind of broth because it will soak up all those juicy, delicious flavors.
Ooh, that's a good idea.
And then when you mash it.
I've never thought about that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like I've made mashed potatoes with buttermilk before.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's another way to do it. Or sour cream too. That works. Mm-hmm. But yeah, buttermilk's a good way to do it. And then, like I said, your chicken, you can fry it, you can grill it, you could shred it. You could do, whatever the heck you want with your chicken. The world is your chicken oyster. I don't know why you would have chicken oysters, but sounds kind of, same with your corn. Oh, pro tip. Go to Trader Joe's, and if they have it, look for the elote mix in the spices, like in that aisle. Mm-hmm. And then again, when you cook your corn, mm-hmm. again, canned corn, make it simple, guys. Don't do anything super. You can do fancy, do the corn ribs. I know you guys saw those online too. And you cut them up into, like, you know, shapes that, and they throw them on the grill. You're being so dang fancy on your TikToks. And
these aren't about fancy. They're about comfort.
You don't have to do that. Exactly. Go get some canned corn. You drain it. Mm-hmm. Drain it. Put that in your in a little saucepan and stuff. Again, little chicken broth, little elote seasoning, little butter, little lid. Cover it. Let it simmer while you're doing other things.
Okay.
And it's delicious. Trust me. And then you strain it when you put it on your corn. Don't put, you know, the whole soupy mess onto your, come on, guys. I shouldn't have to tell you that.
You shouldn't, but you have to tell
me
that.
Same with gravy. I know. Yeah. Same with gravy though. If you decide to bake your chicken, because you can do chicken thighs, you can do chicken breasts, you could do, you know, chicken legs if you wanted to. I don't know why you would, but maybe you're being adventurous. Who knows? In fact, if you guys actually play with this, I kind of want to see what you do.
Oh yeah. If you make this, send pictures to us, you know, please. That would be awesome.
Have fun with it. As long as it involves potatoes, chicken, corn, gravy, and cheese, even prove me wrong. Make it as fancy as possible. I mean, let's have some fun with this one.
If I'm being honest right now, like, the only thing that separates this from, like, a shepherd's pie is that it's chicken instead of beef.
Yeah, shepherd's kinda. Pie, I mean, and then you don't, like, have like a kind of like a mixed, like, veg, like,
shepherd's pie, at least the way that my mom makes it, is mashed potatoes, corn, ground beef, cheese.
Oh, see, and you can do that. You can even swap out the corn for, like, veg all or frozen mixed vegetables and stuff. Literally, you can do whatever you want with this kind of. This is such an easy, hearty thing that you can just toss together. It's not super hard. It's not really a ton of dishes. It's a few, but
if you're cooking a lot of the stuff in the chicken broth, or at least in, you know, you could do the chicken first and then do everything in the same pan, and then it soaks up a lot of that chicken grease that too.
Exactly. If you decide to bake your chicken, use the juices from the chicken in your gravy. And pour that in there. Oh, so delicious. Oh my gosh. Oh, you guys are. Oh, that's another thing. You guys should not be buying full sodium chicken broth. Don't get the low sodium chicken broth. You control your salt.
Yes.
You have full control. Every time I would go in the pandemic, the early pandemic, all the full sodium chicken broth is always gone. Get low sodium chicken broth, and you have full control over how much salt you use. If you're like, oh my God, everything's always so salty.
So good.
Because you're using full salt chicken broth.
That sodium tastes so good.
Also, hey, you guys know the
though.
Difference between. I know, but you know the difference between chicken stock and chicken broth?
I actually don't. So that'd be interesting to know.
So stock is as a more clarified. It's more bones, but it's just a more clarified version and less salty version of chicken broth. Broth is going to have a little bit more fat, not really fat, but, you know, kind of more oily in it than stock will. But I thought that was really interesting.
I had no idea. That's fascinating.
Stop buying full sodium.
By stock or broth, just as long as it's low sodium.
Just as long as it's low sodium. I don't care. And use it in everything. Anytime you need water for something, if it's gravy, if it's, you know, boiling, if you're steaming vegetables, use some chicken broth instead, or some beef broth. It adds just a little bit extra. You want to steam some broccoli? Use some beef broth instead.
Ooh, now I'm thinking about making ramen with chicken broth or something.
There you go. Super good. Oh my gosh. Also, did you know that if you boil some cabbage and then put some glass noodles in it and, like, the water, it'll turn them purple. And then if you squeeze lime juice on that, it'll turn them blue.
I did not know that.
Play with it. We'll play with it. So cool. Chemistry is so cool.
Despite what your mom said growing up, kids, play with your food.
Play with it all you want, because trust me, food does some really cool stuff. And I honestly, because cooking is science and it's so much fun. It's cooking, it's science, heat, and it's art. Flavors, and it's things that mix and things that don't. And like how to, if you're making something and it's not, it doesn't quite taste right, you're like, just salt and pepper aren't really doing anything. Mm-hmm. Vinegar. A little dash of vinegar. That's probably what you're missing. It's that little umami that isn't quite salty, but it's just this little like savory.
Just remember that cooking isn't just a science. It's an art too. So it's like, you know, just play around with it and find the thing that that suits your taste best. You know, everybody's cooking is going to be different. Everybody's tastes are going to be different. Do what tastes best to you.
Have some fun with it. Cooking should be fun. And don't say you can't cook because you're just not paying attention.
I guess I'm just not paying attention.
You're just not paying attention. Pay attention. Okay. But okay. All right. You can't cook. You like to go out. Okay. So then you're like, what's your favorite comfort food?
McDonald's chicken nuggets.
Heck yes, because that's mine too. And it's just,
there are so many reasons we're friends.
Don't tell me what's in it. I don't want to know. I already know what I choose to not acknowledge. I watched Super Size Me, Morgan Spurlock plenty of times. I know.
I just like the way they taste.
I choose to make my life decisions.
I just like the way they taste.
Okay, but you guys might have noticed that lately, if you're near certain menu boards, that there is a new $20 or 20-piece nugget deal, right?
And I've wanted to buy it so many times and just eat it by myself, and it's supposed to be a family meal.
Fantastic! I'm going to show you how to do it for cheap and get extra soda, too. So I'm going to back it up a little bit. This has been my guilty pleasure for a very long time, especially working nights. It's very easy to go midnight. You just run through the drive-thru. You just get your number 7 with a Coke, blah, blah, blah. Coke and ranch. Let's go. They just knew me, right? So then, obviously in the pandemic, I'm not leaving very often. I work from home. And so I'm not going out very often. But every now and then I have those days where I'm like, okay, I'm going through a drive-thru. I ain't cooking. You can't get me to do a dish. I'm not doing it. Right. I'm just going to go get some chicken nuggets. I'm gonna go get me some chicken nuggets.
Yes.
So the first time I went to order this, and obviously Ian wanted some too. He's gonna indulge me in my guilty pleasure. He's gonna get some too.
He's a bad influence.
At this point, although he encouraged me to get some running shoes that I was a little torn on yesterday and stuff, but I'm very glad he did. So thank you pushing me to get my running shoes. Cause I feel much, much better. It's amazing when you get on the right equipment, you're like, oh, I actually do kind of want to run now.
I got new running shoes this past year as well. So,
oh my gosh.
We both digress a lot.
When you replace your running shoes and you're just like, oh, everything feels great again. I don't have to work extra hard. All right. But the first time I went, I ordered 2 number 7s. I think that's what it is on our board here, which would give me 2 and like medium with a Coke, ranch and ketchup. So that's 2 10-piece chicken nuggets, 2 medium French fries and 2 medium Cokes. Right.
Okay. Yep.
That would, if I was just ordering 2 number 7s, that would come out to almost $20 because like $8 a piece plus tax. Yes. So that comes out to like almost like $18. And I was like, that's insane. And at that point, I hadn't even seen the meal deal at this point. So I was just ordering the way I used to. I hadn't even acknowledged that there might have changed the menu while I'd been gone. Right. So the next time I come, I see that. And I was like, oh, okay, I'll just get the meal deal. So I order which is the exact same food, 20 chicken nuggets, 2 medium fries. That's what the meal deal comes with. And then that's $12.98 on its own, at least on my board. I know that this is California prices and stuff. I know it's going to vary a little bit. Then sodas, no matter what size, are $1 each on top of that. So that brings this one, the same exact food. But this is the meal deal, right? So this is the chicken nuggets and the fries and then the Cokes extra, right? Almost $15.
Right.
So you're saving like $3 from getting 2 number 7s.
Well, because you're not paying double tax.
But, technically, I'm going to get you even cheaper.
Okay. All right. Mm-hmm.
Just order. Okay. So then one, just the box of $20 chicken nuggets, mm-hmm. right? Just the box of chicken nuggets, no fries, okay. mm-hmm. right? That's $5.
Okay.
Then a la carte, two medium French fries, okay. same food, mm-hmm. two medium drinks, mm-hmm. same food, mm-hmm. $11.88.
What? Why is there such a just over $10 between all of it?
All the exact same food, guys. But you, the difference between paying freaking almost $20 versus just over $10. Like if I had $10 in my change thing plus, you know, a little extra and stuff, $11.88.
Tessa, your phone's ringing. I think McDonald's wants to know your location.
They probably do. I probably just broke a whole bunch. I mean, I probably just walked myself into one heck of a corner.
Like a McDonald's conspiracy theory. Maybe we should.
Maybe we should start a podcast about
McDonald's conspiracy theories.
Right? What if we had a podcast about conspiracy theories?
My God.
Oh no!
No.
Could you imagine?
But still, though, that's still weird that it would be that different of a price for the exact same food. Like, why would they do that? Do they not? Have they not noticed?
And that's the thing. You know who taught me to do this?
The McDonald's employee.
One of the cashiers.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like, because at first I thought maybe it was
honestly, they even know about it. So.
Like, honestly, at first, when you first met, you know, we're breaking it down, I thought maybe it was because you were paying tax on two separate meals. But then you break it into, you know, like five separate items. And you're not paying tax on five separate items. So, and it comes out cheaper. Than bundling it, which that makes zero sense.
Zero sense. Like if you're from or you've been to California, you may know like In-N-Out, they have meal deals. They have like a number one, a number two, a number, you know, number three. But it's literally just an easier way to order things. It's just, you know,
so maybe you're
a burger, a fry, and a Coke.
Extra for convenience. But it's like meal deals
you're
are
not
usually
paying attention. And it makes me wonder what else on the menu's like that too.
Well, I mean, I feel like they've convinced us that buying a meal is cheaper to bundle it all together than it is to buy it separately. But you've literally proven that it is not cheaper to buy it all together. In fact, it's cheaper to just break it all down and buy each thing individually.
Exactly.
Well, there's a real, like, most of the time I hate the term life hack, but that is a life hack right there. Like, that is a legit life hack. That I will probably
use. I had to buy a lot of nuggets to figure it out.
But still, you spent a grand total of, let's see, 18, 15, and 11, 12?
And 11. I mean, maybe $50, you know.
Yeah.
$40,
45, something like that. That's not too bad.
Something like that.
To learn that lesson. So
that's
it's
not
like,
too bad.
All right. Well, there you go, everybody. I mean, if you need your nuggy fix like I do, just sort everything separately because apparently you're going to save at least $6 or no, at least like $4 up to $6 or $7. So that's nuts.
And that depends on where you are. That could vary state to state. Right, I know that I am in California and that my prices are different, but I bet that if my prices are different like that, I bet they are in other areas too. In fact, I want to know what in your neck of the woods too, if you guys have different McDonald's prices.
Yeah, I'll test it out and I will, I'll post my findings to like our Twitter or something like that and let everybody
know.
Sounds
good.
But yeah, you should definitely either send us pictures of you cooking your home, you know, at home KFC famous bowl, or let us know how much your, you know, nuggy purchase was by separating everything. I'm
or if you found something else on the menu that's kind of similar, like let me know. I want to know. I'm so curious.
And I just
don't have the money to keep doing this.
Yeah. Or let us know where you know where a McDonald's is that has a working ice cream machine, because I could really go for a Shamrock Shake.
Hey, maybe the next conspiracy
broken.
I should do. I did one McDonald's conspiracy. Maybe the next episode I'll do.
That's the next McDonald's
the
conspiracy
machine.
Theory is the ice cream machine. And why is it always broken?
So silly. Oh gosh.
All right, guys.
I swear somebody comes and breaks it just because they see you coming.
Like, well, I mean, from what I've heard, most of the time it's not broken. It's just they don't want it. Because it's so I've worked in fast food before. I worked at Auntie Anne's Pretzels, and they have like shakes and stuff like that. And you have to clean the ice cream machine every night, and it is a pain in the butt to clean. So if you don't use it, you don't have to clean it.
Like, clean it. Exactly.
You know, so I've heard rumors. I can't confirm or deny any of these rumors, but I've heard rumors that most of the time the ice cream machine isn't broken. It's just that either they just don't want to have to clean it that night, or they you know, started closing up early and have cleaned it already.
Already. You know? Exactly. So, they're just not expecting to serve you ice cream at 2 a.m, Sammy.
That's when I want ice cream. But I mean,
for your nuggies, for my nuggies, it goes with the nuggies.
I mean, if you've never dipped your nuggies in ice cream or your french fries in ice cream, you should absolutely do that.
I mean, are you really living if you haven't? I mean,
it's delicious. But yeah, I don't know. Now, that's not to say that they're not absolutely broken. They may be. I'm not trying to discredit and, you know, say absolutely for sure their ice cream machine is not broken. It might be. But I've also
heard you know,
there's
also,
other possibilities out there.
Exactly. When you're charging people who aren't paying attention exorbitant prices, I think you can afford to pay somebody a living wage to incentivize them to clean the ice cream machine.
There we go.
Right? I mean,
you get a,
I can see where the...
You get a bonus today for cleaning the ice cream machine.
Bonus. I mean, geez.
All right, everyone.
Oh, well.
I think we're done, but thank you so much for listening to another episode of Cats and Cooking. Remember, it's not cooking cats, it's cats and cooking.
It's cats and cooking. Don't forget the ampersand.
Yeah. We love doing this for you guys, and we love hearing from you guys. So thank you for continuing to tune in to us. And don't forget,
no cats on the counter.